This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Just say the words AIG bonuses and people's blood begins to boil. Yesterday, President Obama promised to pursue every single legal avenue to block the payments.
This is a corporation that finds itself in financial distress due to recklessness and greed. Under these circumstances, it's hard to understand how derivative traders at AIG warranted any bonuses, much less $165 million in extra pay.
And today, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said Congress is ready to impose new taxes on those bonuses.
You will hear in the next 24 hours from Chairman of our Finance Committee, Senator Baucus, that AIG recipients of these bonuses will not be able to keep all their money. And that's an understatement.
The outrage is bipartisan. Republican Senator Charles Grassley said the executives ought to either give the money back or kill themselves. His office later said that last part was hyperbole, but not everyone agrees that this outrage is helpful. In an opinion piece on The Arena at Politico.com, Charles Calamiris argued, as a country, we need to find the courage and strength of character to put the national interest above our own desires to punish financial institutions. Withholding effective support, he added, will delay our recovery. Well, if you agree, or if you'd like to take issue, our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Charles Calamiris is a professor of financial institutions at Columbia University and co-director of the Project on Financial Deregulation at the American Enterprise Institute. He joins us now from a studio at Columbia. Nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Great to be here, Neil.
And we own now, the people of the United States, I think, own 80% of AIG. And these bonuses are going to people who many people believe were the very ones who got the company into the mess it's in the first place. Why shouldn't they be asked to give the money back?
Well, I don't think any of us knows exactly who these bonuses are going to and for what reasons. A lot of what the bonuses are being used for is to pay normal compensation of middle-level managers who have this coming to them as part of their contractual agreements with AIG. So from what I understand from reading the newspapers at least, much of this money, if not all of it at this point, is something that AIG would like to get out of paying but doesn't see any way to do. The remainder being sort of normal bonuses that it feels it wants to pay in order to retain good people so that, of course, they don't lose even more money. So I think the point here is it's very hard to micromanage from a distance here to know whether a compensation payment is helpful to an institution. The CEO of AIG is not himself making bonuses and has said that, in his opinion, he's doing the best he can under the circumstances and that these payments are authorized or are warranted. And, you know, I think what we're really seeing is a backlash of anger about the fact that these institutions are requiring so much support and that they did so much harm. And that's understandable, but it's not, you know, anger is not going to be the thing that gets us out of this mess.
People have a hard time understanding the concept. AIG just reported the greatest quarterly loss in corporate history. Bonuses for what?
Well, part of the compensation system of people who work in financial institutions involves bonuses. Now, I'm a professor. I don't make bonuses. I just make a salary. The reason why we compensate people in the financial industry, not just with a straight salary, but with a smaller salary than they otherwise would get and with more of a component of their compensation in bonuses, is because we want to incentivize them not to lose money. We want to incentivize them to make money. And their bonuses are usually linked directly to their performance. So if you have a trader working for a financial institution, the bonus that that trader gets is going to depend on whether the trader's profitable. If you try not to let the trader make a bonus, you're either going to have to pay the trader a much higher flat salary, which isn't consistent with good incentives, or you pay the salary, you don't pay the trader enough, and then the trader leaves. So it doesn't really make sense to get rid of bonuses, especially for people who we're hoping will make wise decisions so that they don't lose us even more money.
There's another point that some of who are supporting this have been making, which is these are contractual obligations. These are contracts, and if you're going to have the government go in and rewrite private contracts, well, where does that stop?
Exactly. And I think from what I understand, the lawyers who've picked over this pretty carefully haven't really found much room for reducing them. But I want to emphasize, too, that there's a strong economic argument for some bonuses. I can't sit in here today, and neither can you, judge from a distance without knowing the details what's warranted and what's not. But we have to ask the CEO that's there. Remember, he wasn't the CEO during the troubles. He was brought in specifically to help clean things up. He's not making big bonuses, and he's trying to do the best he can, and in his judgment, trying to find a compensation system that rewards people for managing properly. Why are we so sure he's wrong?
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We'll start with Richard. Richard with us from Fort Collins in Colorado.
Yeah, hi. I'm confused about why we need to bail AIG out if it's an insurance company. Can we just let it fail and anybody insured with them can insure with another company?
Why is AIG too big to fail, Charles Calamares?
AIG really consists of a lot of insurance company subsidiaries that are within a large holding company. And the loss problems, for the most part, were within the holding company. And the losses, to a very large extent, were traced not to insurance contracts, but to over-the-counter derivatives contracts that AIG engaged in that have an insurance component but aren't what you and I would think of as normal insurance contracts. Those contracts involved a lot of counterparties, meaning other financial institutions. And if the concern was that if AIG's holding company wasn't able to make good on its payments, it would be very disruptive to the whole financial system and that would harm all of us. In fact, the reason this was so damaging at AIG was that AIG was a AAA-rated financial institution, if you can believe that. What that meant was that under previous market circumstances, the way it used to work, no longer does, by the way, but it used to be that if you were AAA-rated, you didn't have to collateralize, meaning maintain cash reserves against your counterparty positions in the derivatives market. And so when things started to go wrong and AIG faced a downgrade from its AAA status, that created a huge liquidity scramble because AIG now had to come up with huge amounts of cash to use as collateral against all of its derivative positions. When the government decided to step in, its main concern was that this would lead to a systemic liquidity crisis throughout the financial system. And that concern was legitimate. Of course, a lot of the money that's been used for AIG, about $170-some billion has been transferred to AIG. A lot of it's been used to beef up those collateralized positions in its over-the-counter market. So it's not just a normal insurance company that's having problems. It's a company that, unfortunately, very recklessly entered into a lot of financial contracts that could have harmed us if those contracts had been allowed to sort of chaotically unravel.
Richard, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Here's an email from Dawn in Iowa City. I've had to take money out of my retirement to meet my obligations. I know I have to pay taxes and penalties on that withdrawal. I'm supposed to feel okay that while paying hundreds of millions in bonuses to individuals who bet on unstable assets worldwide and drove the international community to bankruptcy, the failure of the Obama administration, she continues, to stop these payments is the biggest failure of this administration to date. It is patently absurd to say AIG has an unbreakable contractual obligation when AIG is known in the industry for breaking its contractual obligations to customers by failing to pay its claims. And that's, that points out to a number of things, but to one of the major aspects of this, which is the political problem this presents to the Obama administration.
Exactly, Neil. I would disagree with her, and I would say the big failure of the Obama administration, like the previous administration, has been its failure to courageously try to explain to the American people the really hard sell, which is we need to do this, and we need to do it aggressively, and we need to do it quickly, and we need to do it for you. It's a hard sell. It doesn't sound right, but in fact it is. And that's the real failure because this is such politically risky territory. You heard in the piece that you played at the beginning of our interview here, the president talking, you could hear that the last thing he wants to do is be identified with this kind of policy. And yet, because of its political risk, he'll be attacked from all sides if he goes out and says the right thing. And that's really why we as a country need to come together, stop being angry and start thinking and realizing that the people at AIG are now working for us. you know, we own 80%, and we own really more than that. We own the whole sort of bad side of the obligations. And what we need is we need to compensate them so that they stop losing money for us. And that involves reasonable bonuses. And, of course, we do have legal obligations to them, and we don't want to go around violating those because, guess what? We'll bear the cost of that, too, because if we do things that are illegal, we'll have to pay for it because we're the stockholders. We have to think.
Let's get Neil on the line. Neil calling from East Hampton in New York.
Okay. I think your guest completely misses the point here. And the essential point is that what we're doing is rewarding failure. And in a supposedly free market system, you know, you supposedly stand on your performance. But the anger of the American people, it's not that the $160 million in bonuses, because it's part of the nature of the process. The real problem is that since 1973, 90% of the country's incomes have stagnated. And so you've got the whole country not making more money, not living better, accumulating massive debt. You know, from 2.7 to 44 trillion is the change in the national debt. And so you're stuck in this conundrum where the rest of the country's been suffering, hasn't been rewarding, hasn't got any rewards from the economic growth. And now you're looking at them and you're saying, hey, we're giving these guys $160 million. And they failed. So, you know, where do you go from there, you know? That's the question.
And that belief that we're rewarding failure, Charles Calamira said that is behind a lot of this anger.
It's a good argument. Look, I've made most of my career talking about the dangers of rewarding failure in financial institutions, so it's especially ironic that I'm here on your program telling people that right now that isn't the right answer. Yes, it doesn't feel very good. It creates bad incentives too. So what we need to do is think about how we're going to improve those incentives going forward. And a big part of my policy recommendations is how we can prevent this from happening again. But right now, we have to also deal with what the cards that were dealt. And the cards that were dealt is a financial system, the brain center of the economy, that's desperately in need of propping up. And if we don't prop it up, we're the ones who are going to not get credit. We're the ones who are going to suffer the consequences of a very depressed economy for a very long time. We're the ones who are going to lose our jobs, our homes, and our retirement savings. So we have to think. We can't be penny wise and pound foolish. We can't cut off our nose to spite our face. And that is hard thinking. And it doesn't feel very good. It requires us to grow up, not to act like a mob, not to threaten these people who work for AIG, but to act responsibly.
We're talking with Charles Calamaris, professor of financial institutions at Columbia University, about the AIG bonus outrage. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This email from Ann in Huntertown, Indiana. Let's just take a deep breath and let it go. The Congress needs to work on putting regulations into effect instead of punishing individuals with excess taxes or even punishing AIG as a whole. I'm a taxpayer, but there are far more important things to get upset about. Concentrate on the important issues, stop the political grandstanding, and get something done.
Thank you, Anne. If I weren't already married, I'd ask for her phone number. But I think Anne's hitting a really good point, which is, you know, this is very harmful. What are we telling our politicians right now? This is the thing that's worrying me the most. This outrage is telling President Obama, be careful, because if you do what's necessary, you're going to really pay a big political price for it. And I'll tell you, big harm is being done in Washington, because what we're showing people in Washington, our politicians, our bureaucrats, what we're showing them is that courage is going to be punished dearly.
Let's go to Tom. Tom with us from Tallahassee.
Yes, I find it interesting that on the one hand, the United Auto Workers were forced to make major concessions which to General Motors in return for mail-out money from Congress, and the UAW represents a private contract. But on the other hand, now we have the Justice Department and the Treasury Department wringing its hands and saying, oh, there's nothing we can do about these executives. Well, I think that's just hogwash. I'd say that there are two options. One is to force AIG to declare bankruptcy, in which case they then would have, the government would have the right to go in and renegotiate those contracts with those senior executives, or B, do nothing, that is, by nothing I say, refuse to let them have the money and tell these corporate thieves to come get it if they think they can.
The money, I believe most of it, if not all of it, Tom, was mailed out on Friday. But to his larger point, Charles Calamiris, people say, look, the UAW had to renegotiate its contracts. What about these guys?
It's a great question. And I very much support, in general, and in the case of the UAW, I supported the idea that bankruptcy is the only way for us to go forward. And so the question is, why is it that we haven't used bankruptcy more? Well, we did use it in one case. We used it in Lehman. Lehman Brothers went into bankruptcy. And what people are learning from that is that because we don't have a good bankruptcy process tailored for these kinds of financial institutions, that bankruptcy process is going to take years to resolve. It's going to involve all sorts of very timely, time-consuming and costly controversies across borders of different countries. So one of the things to bear in mind is that while it's not really practical for us to do that in the case of AIG right now, there are things that the government is saying that are kind of consistent with the caller's point. Number one, we're trying to figure out if we can carve out and sell pieces of AIG, make it a less complex organization, and work this out sort of as if we're in a bankruptcy process. In fact, we're almost in a bankruptcy process. The government owns 80% of the stock. The government's really calling the tune here. The government's changed the senior management. That hasn't happened yet at General Motors, I don't believe. So, you know, we've actually put AIG through a process which is not legally bankruptcy, but it's very similar. Furthermore, the administration, it appears, is going to support the Federal Reserve's proposal that we create a new bankruptcy process, effectively something called a bridge bank process, a prepackaged bridge bank, to be more specific, for financial institutions going forward so that we do have an orderly way to wrest control from management and to resolve these problems without the same kinds of incentive problems that the caller's worried about. So the caller's on track. But what he's missing is that really AIG is already in effectively a bankruptcy situation. 80% of its owners are the government. Management's already been replaced.
And Tom, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And we'd like to thank Charles Calamiris for his time today. He's a professor of financial institutions at Columbia University and co-directs the Project on Financial Deregulation at the American Enterprise Institute. We have a link to his opinion piece on the arena at npr.org/talk. Thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
And tomorrow, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, joins us with a new trivia question and another shot at the new No Prize prize. We'll talk to you then. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.